So, all right, thank you, Vikas, and thank you all for coming. So today I'd like to share several stories or examples of using genomics-assisted breeding in wheat, kernza, or intermediate wheatgrass, and sweet potato. So I got my PhD in China working on wheat breeding, and 5 years ago I came to University of Minnesota working on wheat and kernza breeding. I work with wheat breeder Jim Madison, and there I also attend Dr. Rex Bernardo's breeding class to get more training on plant breeding. And this year I joined NC State working on sweet potato breeding and as a breeder. So the first story is about kernza or intermediate wheatgrass. So how many people know or hear about kernza or intermediate wheatgrass? Can you please raise your hand? Wow. All right, good. Thank you. So kernza is a new perennial green crop. The domestication started in 1980s, and before 2000, there are only two cycles of selection were done. And in 2002, the Land Institute started their breeding program. And in 2011, University of Minnesota, we initiated our breeding program. And then time, I joined the breeding program and started to leading the breeding project. So annual crop and perennial crops. For annual crops, so we know now almost all the green crops are annual green crop. So in spring, we prepare the field, we plant the seeds, and we manage the field, and then we harvest the green in the fall. But for perennial crops, we plant them in 1 year, we can come back to harvest them in the next several years. And for the current annual green crop system, so we can see the farmer's land are only covered by crops in June, July, August, and September, only in 3 or 3.5 months. But for perennial crop, in early spring, the crop can start its growth. For example, in May or in April or in May, and in fall, after we harvest the green, the perennial crop, the plants can start regrowth very fast. So perennial green crop can cover the field throughout the year. This kind of year-round coverage can help reduce the water, soil erosion, and also nitrogen leaching. And also compared to annual crop, you can see perennial crops usually have very deep root system. So this kind deep root system can keep the nutrients there and also keep the water in the soil. Also, it can capture more carbon and keep them in the soil. So the ecological benefit of intermediate wheatgrass is the main reason why we are developing an intermediate wheatgrass from a perennial grass to a perennial green crop. So a little bit of background about intermediate wheatgrass. So it's a perennial relative of wheat, and it's hexaploid. It is an outgrowther, so that means every seed or every plant are different from each other. It's quite similar with human. Every people is different, it's unique, and it has a very big genome size, is 12 something gigabase. And in recently we have genotyping by sequencing, next generation sequencing system, so we can develop genome markers very easily, and then we can develop genetic map, we can map QTL, we can even test genomic selection, how genomic selection works. So first we develop a consensus genetic map using 7 mapping populations. So we got 21 linkage groups and more than 10,000 markers in this genetic map. And this work was done by collaborating with Jesse Poland and Steve Larson. Jesse Poland is in Kent State, and Steve Larson is USDA Utah. And once we have genetic map, we can map QTLs using linkage mapping and association mapping. So here is just an example about association mapping in seed size and weight. So you can see the variation or the size different in the population. So the plant material we used is a breeding population. So we know every plant is different. So we collect data from individual plants. So all the results I reported here is from this kind of spaced plant. It's from individual plant. So we have 2 years data, and here is the pipeline. We call SNP. We align the marker to the consensus genetic map, and then we map QTL. So here's just part of the result. We identify 15 QTLs for seed weight and 18 QTLs for seed area size. It's very very good. We have some very good results. So the data from seed weight and from seed area size, they match with each other very well. So you can see the high genetic correlation between these two traits is 0.8. And also we find 10 of the 15 QTLs for seed weight also identified from the seed area size. So this good match is very nice for us to get this kind of result. So from this, we might understand the genetic architecture of the seed size and the seed weight. So the question is, can we use this QTL for breeding? So the answer might be yes, but as a breeder, we work on more than 10 different traits. So if only for one trait, I need to handle 10 different markers, and it's very hard for me to handle more than 10 traits simultaneously. So theoretically, we can use this QTL, but it is not very, very easy to do that in the real breeding program. So we know genome selection is an approved tool for quantitative traits improvement. So we did some tests. Again, the data is from the spaced plant nursery, and we have 2 years data. So this figure show how the breeding population organized in the field. So we have A, B, C, D, E, five blocks, and in each block we have 60 families, and we have 10 plants from each family. So that means for these five blocks, the composition, the plant, the genotype composition is quite similar. They are all from the same 60 families, but the plants are different. Again, we don't have replication. So all the plants, every plant in this population is unique, is different from each other. So we test genomic selection. So we have two scenarios. One is we use block A to train genomic selection model and to predict the performance of the remaining breeding population. The other one is we use block B to train the genome selection model to predict the remaining population. So here is the result, the seven different traits and the predictive ability. We get similar results from the two scenarios, and also the predictive ability is from 0.45 to 0.65. So this kind of predictive ability, we are able to distinguish the good performance plant and the poor performance plant. So we can make selection based on that. And also we found that the QTLs we identified from the association mapping project respond very well for the genome selection. So here are 11 QTLs showing additive effect. And here is the allele frequency of the favorable QTL alleles. The orange one is the original breeding population, and the green one is the top 2% of the population based on German selection result. The blue one is the top 2% of population selected based on the phenotypic data. So you can see for almost all the KKLs, the allele frequency is increased in responding to the genomic selection. And so based on the test, this test, we designed our breeding scheme is genomic selection-based recurrent selection. So instead of planting this breeding population in the field, we only plant a very small set of the breeding population, and we, using this small set of population, train the model, and also based on the data of this small set of population, we select the best family. We only genotype the progeny of the best family, and using the model to predict the performance, and then make selections, making cross, and then produce seed for the next cycle of selection. So here are two things I want to mention. Is here we have very small subset of the population. The population size is very small, so it's very easy to handle. So we can have different reps. We can have several reps and have several locations. So we can have a high quality phenotype data. So which is key for the success of genomic selection. And the other thing is, so here we only genotype the best families, so this saves us the cost for the genotyping, and also the relationship between the training population and the breeding population is very close. This kind of close relationship guarantees the high predictive ability. So we use the same idea in wheat breeding. So this is a typical pedigree selection in wheat breeding, which is widely used in wheat breeding. And in Minnesota, in the F5 generation, we screening the fusarium and also the bread making quality. So the screening of these two traits take a lot of labor and a long time. So we try to use genomic selection to reduce the labor cost. The same idea, we using a small subset of the breeding population to train the model and predict the remaining part of the breeding population. So we got some preliminary result. Here we have two locations, and in each location we only have one rep. So the predictive ability is 0.3 of 0.4, so it is not very high, but we still can distinguish the susceptible one and the resistant one. We can drop the susceptible one and keep the resistant one for the next generation evaluation. I believe if we can have more reps, we can have better field design. We will have high quality phenotype data. We will get much better predictive ability. So the next example is sweet potato. That's what I'm doing now. So sweet potato is the number one vegetable crop in North Carolina, and North Carolina is the number one sweet potato production in United States. So, and you can see the trend of the acreage and also the production is always up. And recently, more and more people, including the consumers and also the company, they are more and more interested in the French fries and also chips. So we know in 1980s, the French fries and chips really make potato fly. The acreage increased a lot. So we believe in the next several years, so the French fries and chips from sweet potato can make sweet potato fly. So hope we can see more and more. I think now we already see more and more sweet potato in the menu of several different and many different restaurants, and I hope we can someday we can see them in McDonald's or Burger King. So a little bit about sweet potato again. So sweet potato is hexploid. The chromosome number is 90, and it is an outcrosser. And now there are still debates whether it's auto hexploid or allo hexploid or even auto allo hexploid. And there is very few molecular genetic study about sweet potato. So all the breeding work are conventional breeding. So this is a typical breeding scheme in North Carolina. So first we started with crosses. In year one, we plant the seeds of from these crosses and single plant, individual plant, and the number is 60,000 space plant. And we make selection based on the shape and also the appearance. So we narrow down the number to 1,200. And then in the next several years, we use clonal propagation to try to increase the plot size to evaluate the yield and some other traits. So as a breeding program, we have very big team. Every year we plant 50 acres, and the planting takes 3 months. The harvesting takes another 3 months. So it's a lot of labor, a lot of work. So recently we have some genomic tools from the GT4SP project. So now we have reference genome from diploid wild relative, and also we have genotyping by sequencing technology there. And also we develop genetic map, we map QTLs, and we have a database to manage the genotype data and also the phenotype data. So now we have some of these now. And also we have some phenotype tools, for example, NIRS. So every year we add more West Country data, try to upgrade the NIR equation, and now we routinely use NIR to measure the chemical components like sugars, dry matter, starch, this kind of traits, try to help us to make decision to select variety can be used for French fries, for chips. And this year we add a new line is called Exeter Grader. So we scan all the roots from one plot. So we take 2 pictures of each root, and after scanning, so we can know the number of roots in that plot. We can know the size, we can know the weight, we can know the size distribution, we can know the shape variation, all these traits. So now we try to integrate all these genotypic tools and also phenotype tools in genomic selection, try to increase our selection efficiency. So the idea is the same. So we select a subset population from year one material. From this 60,000, we select a small population. We train the model. And also at the same time, we plant these 60,000 in the field, and we make selection based on the appearance and also the shape. So we can narrow down the number to 1,200, which is feasible for genotyping. So we genotype them, and then using the model to predict the yield, predict the quality, predict the disease resistance, and also storage ability, these kind of traits. And then make selection to narrow down the number to several hundred, and then we can, for the next several years, evaluation. So for this here, two things. One is we can selection for yield in year one material, and also for quality, for disease, for these trees in year one material, and also we narrow down the number to several hundred, so it will reduce labor in the next several years. So this will benefit of we will benefit from germ selection definitely. And now we are collecting data. So this winter, I believe we will have some result. So finally, I will thank Dr. Jim Allison and Don Wise and also other collaborators in intermediate wheatgrass part. And for the sweet potato part, we have this is the funding resources. And we have very, very big team in NC State. And also thanks the collaborators in the GT5P project. We work very hard, and also we have a lot of fun. So this is my Halloween pumpkin. All right, thank you. You know, now, so for sweet potato and for intermediate wheatgrass, we just randomly select. You know, we don't have any information about those lines, you know. So we just randomly select from each family or from each crosses. We randomly select 10 or 15. So, but for wheat, you know, it's at 5 population. The population size is about 1,200. So we can genotype this F5 population first, and based on the based on their genotype, the diversity, we select some diversity lines and use it and the training. So,
thank you.
All right, thank you.